I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for rolling. Let's welcome Travis back to the show. Travis.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Take a load off. Yeah.
Welcome. It's a hard thing to do, you know, take a load off sometimes.
Isn't it? Did you hear the show with Lily?
I didn't catch that one.
The show, Lily, I asked Lily if she had any advice. For those of you just tuning in and may have also missed the show with Lily Whiteswan, it was maybe 3 weeks ago. And she is a curandera and a traditional healer and told stories about her life and her becoming her origin story here. It's a great show. Go to In the Cab Radio at Linktree, and you can find lots of links where you can catch that. And I said, Lily, do you have any advice for people just walking around right now that are trying to get tapped into some protection? And, you know, how do we walk in the world today and you know, kind of balance it out? And I was like, rocks in your pocket, salt, like, what's the deal? And she said, relax. And I tried to make a joke, but I was like, relax. And she was like, I know it sounds, you know, just like, oh, relax. But, you know, she said, I say to myself, relax, 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 relax. And then you know, you can bring the collection of yourselves back to yourself and reintegrate all these disparate parts. And then from that place of wholeness, then we're better equipped to be out in the world, you know?
Yeah, take a deep breath before you tackle a problem.
Yeah.
Mentally or physically. You know, stay calm for sure is the key. I mean, that's the big thing that I worry about. People don't understand how deep anxiety can be for people that are struggling. And then they get in survival mode, and then hypervigilance becomes part of their everyday character when it's just supposed to, like, save you in moments of danger, you know. But yeah, it keeps us on edge, and in some way it keeps us distracted when we think it's focusing. You know, we got to come up with new ideas. There's nothing has prepared us for where we're at. So continuing to try and reassess the past or your own past and judge it up against what's happening now, it's like a loop. Like, certain things need to die and decay in order for life to begin, because life happens at the decay. It's just where it begins. So it's a hard thing to stomach, you know, to watch the sadness and, you know, the things that you get to see as a small village. Like, we're very personal out here. You don't really hide anything. You can hold your mask on for a while, but we're all out in the open. We can see each other. You know, there's elderly people around us in all the different states of passing, and it can be beautiful and heart-wrenching to watch at the same time. And yeah, I don't know where I was going with all that.
But, yeah. Well, I think we're going into mutual aid. We're going into mutual aid. We're going to look at this book by Dean Spade called Mutual Aid. And the subtitle of the book is Building Solidarity During This Crisis and the Next. And it was written in 2020. Well, it came out in 2020, published by Dean Spade there by Verso. And the idea behind this book is mutual aid is the radical act of caring for each other while working to change the world. And it's exactly what you're saying. These points are touched on, that we can't make changes if we're constantly worried about survival. And so what mutual aid, the idea behind it is that we set up structures in our communities where we can support each other in day-to-day systems that we need for survival, where the government isn't showing up or is actively undermining us in our process to survive. There are manufactured crises by governments and institutions, intentional or unintentional. There are things that get in the way of us existing on this planet as people. And we want these systems to change to support life. And when you're worried about rent and medical bills and childcare and clothes and immigration status and, you know, your mental health and all of these things, how can we create lasting structural changes in our society? We got enough to worry about just being in these bodies. So I think where you're going with this and taking care of our elders and actually seeing each other as humans without our masks, that's the best way we can care for each other, is to be vulnerable and reach out to people in their vulnerability and offer assistance. We're going to go all the way back, but just on this topic, in the first part, solidarity, not charity. And this idea that mutual aid is something that we do because it's in alignment with our ways of being, not because we're trying to be charitable or get some sort of brownie points or karma points for it. You know, showing up for people in our community is just what we do here. And so it's an integrated way of being. And I really appreciate that.
Yes. But the thing about people is, you know, we're all different types. For instance, for me, a major indicator is not how someone treats me, because people can turn charisma on and off. It's how they treat other people. And that's when their mask is off. And you see what's real. And it goes back to simple things like how many people take their shopping cart back to the corral. You know, for me, I'm thinking about the guy or the kid who's got to come out there and get that thing, you know, or someone who wants to park, finding a basket in a spot. You know what I mean? Like, there's consideration, and that consideration gets into the whole empathy, compassion. And that's what this is addressing, like trying to move into that form of thinking instead of competition.
Can I tell you a real basic overthinking that I do about this shopping cart thing? You know, I used to work at grocery stores, and that was part of my job. I actually look at whether it's a nice day or not, is whether I take it all the way back into the store. So if it's raining, I'll take it all the way back to the store. Or super cold, I'll take it, you know, if I'm parked reasonably. I mean, I always take it to the corral, because I hate trying to park and the thing is like just floating there. But if it's a beautiful day, I'll take it to the far corral over there, because I know what it's like to be that stalker or that bag person who's like, I need to get out of this store and I'm going to go outside and grab the cart. It was like getting the carts on a beautiful day was a really nice excuse to get outside.
What you said about knowing what it's like.
Exactly.
That is empathy. The root of empathy, yep. You know, and knowing what it's like is not where everyone's at. No. We have some severe class inequality. It just makes bubbles where you can exist without ever having to think about somebody else. I can't imagine from my perspective what that feels like. Sounds terrible. But people love it there in that headspace, that it's just them on the world. And that's it. They just have to think about themselves.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of personal work that can go into, we have to teach it, you know. And speaking of, I think we were off mic, and for those of you just tuning in, I touched on at the end of the last hour, the changing of the Department of Defense to the Department of War, that executive order that Trump signed last night on the 5th. We were talking about chasing Pete Hegseth down the street, you know, because his idea was, we're not doing any more of this PC, we're training warriors. It was a quote that I saw of him in the news. And you know, that was the movement. That's the movement of what they're calling the dark enlightenment age that the technocracy bros who are trying to take over our government right now are into dark enlightenment. And that's that empathy is a sign of weakness. Elon Musk had been telling his partners and followers that last year, and it became, you know, part of this larger movement, which Little Queen Trash Mouth has talked about quite a bit in the show. And I'm just going to pull it up for people to just, if you Google dark enlightenment or if you internet search, because, you know, Google, we can't even talk about their new deal with the genociders. But there's a movement under the name Dark Enlightenment, and it's a neo-reactionary movement is what Wikipedia is calling it. And it's a reaction against Enlightenment values, which, you know, Enlightenment came about in the 18th century, and it was an emphasis on reason and scientific method, tolerance, progress, and rights of humanity, moving us toward a more enlightened age. And Dark Enlightenment is like, we don't want any of that woo-woo. We don't want people having too much feelings.
Right, because the war machine makes a lot of money, and it's literally fraud, waste, and abuse in action of people.
Yeah. So, that said, if we'd like to combat the fraud, waste, and abuse of people, we have to create new systems. Mm-hmm. If that's something that you're into. If you're listening to this show, I would bet that you're into that. Or you're a federal agent. So, Travis, should we talk about the introduction a little bit? The introduction is titled, Crisis Conditions Require Bold Tactics. And you pointed out to me a little while ago, the introduction anchors itself in the COVID-19 pandemic and Hong Kong in 2019, and what the protest movement was like in Hong Kong at that time when Wuhan was their close neighbor, Wuhan being ground zero of the COVID-19 pandemic. They had commuter trains running with a high population from Wuhan into Hong Kong. So Hong Kong was like the first real strike outside of Wuhan where people were getting sick and the government did nothing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they refused to close the border. I mean, the types of actions they're talking about are two kind of on a two-sided sword situation. So you had people who were taking care of people. They were setting up, you know, stations for sanitation and PPE.
That's personal protective equipment for those of you who don't know PPE.
But on the other side, there's apparently groups who were willing to take actions as far as bombing facilities and the border. So that's probably why this book is on the banned book situation, because we can't think about having to go to links like that. Because we're trying to be reasonable, trying to stay on the path of reason, like you were saying, the enlightened state. And, you know, it really puts into question what you've been told is right and wrong in your mind. Because in situations like this, your last resort becomes your first in survival mode. And I feel like we can't even tell right now where we're at in how this is all unfolding. Especially down here in New Mexico, we haven't seen any actions or anything really taking place yet. So nothing really has changed in our observable bubble. But when it does, you know, will we have great examples to follow from places that it's happened before? Will we be able to network and pull together to do, you know, to perform these ideas that we have, like in Madrid, on a larger scale where there's population density. You know, we're talking about things that are on the margins. We're talking about food, dental, gardening, and those are things that are taking resources from the margins. For instance, the garden runs on compost. People can bring their compost down there. That's some little tiny something that we all have that could be pulled together to do something else. And that's how you make it on the margins. And I feel like because we live on the edge out here, on the margins, it's kind of easier for us to see, like, okay, time is something that we have. So we have people who dedicate time to answer the phone to get the medical benefits to who they need to get to, or to schedule various services around here. We have people who donate their time to make the food on Friday at the fire station, for instance. We have people who donate their time to things, and that's like the most valuable resource we have around here at times. But when people aren't feeling frozen, which I'm seeing a lot of, it seems nowadays, that people are getting tired. So, and, you know, the government's whole flood the zone thing is doing its damage. So I think calming down, we talked about this before we even started, and really trying to focus on this mutual aid idea from a lot of more different angles. Know that it's not just food and dental. What's next? What's next? Some people just need people to talk to, a venue to sit at and be seen, have a connection. And I feel like there's always a new opportunity for us to find that type of a space. We have a few of them here in town, the ballpark, the chairs under the trees at the greengrocer. I call them demilitarized zones. They're basically a spot you can be where no one can say you're loitering. You're supposed to be there. That's why the chair is there. You know, that's a really a strange vulnerability that people have, that they don't feel comfortable where they don't feel comfortable. And there's a lot of places in town I feel comfortable. Sitting on the steps out here, nobody's going to come and tell you anything. So I feel like there's things that we're doing to take care of things that we're not acknowledging yet, that on a bigger scale we could work on. And it sounds exciting to me to build environments for people to be social in. But yeah, I feel like we're going up against the devil and we're not supposed to announce our intention.
Right. Well, I feel like let's just scream it from the tree tops, because the idea is we can't be afraid of the devil. We're going to put on our iron shirt, Travis, and chase the devil out of work. Okay?
Yeah.
We're going to send him to outer space to find another race. Okay?
Yes.
Just like they say in the song. Okay? You know, this is, I'm not going to get into karaoke hour. But Max Romeo, y'all, because that's the idea, is that we can't show fear and we can't get way ahead of ourselves. We have to relax. I'm going to read a couple of things from the book that I have underlined here. And this, some of the stuff that we talk about with Hong Kong, I didn't get into the history. Hot Diggity and I were talking a little bit yesterday about getting caught up in theory and history and things like this, which is very important, but also it can pull people away from what can we do right now. And from what you're saying, and the vibe is definitely a tired vibe and an overwhelmed vibe. But I think context is really good to have. And what was going on with the bombing of facilities and the protest movement in Hong Kong at that time is not really talked about in depth in this book. And I don't have any really understanding of the history of Hong Kong, how it became a territory of China, what China's imperialism and imposition is and was on Hong Kong that already had people upset before COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Because there was already, an uprising against the chief executive. Her name is Carrie Lam. And she had an 80% disapproval rating before COVID-19 even emerged. So people were already upset. You know, there was already a large movement going on there. And COVID happened in the midst of that. And, you know, I think this book is relevant, especially this part, because we're seeing a resurgence in COVID and we're under a fascist regime right now that is plunging the population into a place where no one wants to go. I think I've been meeting more and more people who are like, I'm sorry, I voted for Trump. And I'm like, don't tell me. I mean, well, tell me more. Cry, actually. Just, just tell me everything. Cry. Now do something. Mm. I wanted to just bring a couple of little snippets from the introduction that I have. It's underlined here. Mutual aid gives people a way to plug into movements based on their immediate concerns, and it produces social spaces where people grow new solidarities, which is exactly what you were talking about. At its best, mutual aid actually produces new ways of living where people get to create systems of care and generosity that address harm and foster well-being. You indicated that with just having social spaces where people can gather. Mm-hmm. And we see throughout America, history and present, where gathering in certain numbers of certain people was discouraged by police and governments because what are y'all over there planning? And they're mostly marginalized groups of people meeting.
Right, of course. I saw it where I went to college in Portales. They had made a town rule or something back in the day that any group of five people or more was considered a possible gang.
Yes.
And that didn't affect anyone but the Hispanic population. And the rest, you know, of course, yeah, rules for thee, not for me, kind of vibration. And yeah, it's all so out in the open right now that I don't know what to make of it.
We keep doing it. The other thing, this is all on page 2. We're talking about Mutual Aid by Dean Spade for y'all just joining. Dean Spade says, left social movements have two big jobs right now. First, we need to organize to help people survive the devastating conditions unfolding every day. Second, we need to mobilize hundreds of millions of people for resistance so we can tackle the underlying causes of these crises. Now that sounds like a tall order. Let's mobilize hundreds of millions of people.
It's only two things to do.
The first one, you know, but really, you know, Dean Spade goes, this is just the introduction. I mean, we get detailed in how to do that and work together as we get into the rest of the book, which hopefully will go for a few weeks with a few different people coming in to talk about this. But do you have something to offer on that,
well,
that
on, point on, there? On mutual aid in general, like the, what people need to understand about empathy and compassion is that it comes with a reward. And the reward is in that messed up dopamine system that we carry around. And mutual aid can feed that dopamine system, because when you do something for somebody, you naturally basically get a little dose of dopamine, and that's your body's way of rewarding you to send you down a direction. And I think that that's what we're really trying to communicate to people, that a better life and feeling good is what we all want. All of us on the planet want to feel good during our existence here as much and as often as possible. And that is part of our chemical system. And we're imbalanced right now because of media and because of poverty and a lot of different things, stress, anxiety, the way to fix it is just that. What else can you feed that with? Your dopamine system. Like, what can you replace what was making you feel good with something that is good for everybody that also makes you feel good?
One of the overarching points is why we're talking about solidarity through crisis, and how Spade points out that when things are the worst, that we have the best chance to work together, because I think the baseline is so low. The dopamine becomes not something, you know, like, I don't need to fulfill this gluttonous thing. I really need just a baseline, like gas for my car, medical, first aid, you know what I mean? Like, and then while we're in these crises, you know, to put out the fire, to shovel the snow, to fix my falling down fence, I need help because my Social Security check is cut and my house is falling down, and this is immediate. What do I need to feel good immediately is not to have fall down the steps. You know what I mean? And it sounds terrible, but it's because capitalism has injected this greedy expectation that the dopamine bar became so high under capitalism that we can achieve these great levels of pleasure if we just work harder and spend more money. Now that you work harder and get no money, and then you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your utilities, you can't get to work, then you don't need a vacation because you're really just worried about keeping the lights on. And that's where I think the system is unraveling in itself. And the scary part that becomes murderous is, like, what do you do with a population that you have deprived so much that they can't even contribute to capitalism anymore except to revolt and build new systems that work, right? Mm-hmm. So then the dopamine becomes I need love in my community. That's why we do the to All About Love and you know, these ways to feed our spirits, because it's no longer I'm going to have this piece of jewelry or this extravagant thing. I just want a hug, right, and not a mental breakdown today.
It's like a death of your old self that you've been keeping on life support, thinking that you were going to someday get that thing.
The American dream. it's like, for many people, it was never something to fully feel like you were qualified to get. For some people, but then it became such a, everybody got a TV, everybody had a radio, everybody can get some form of smartphone. All those things, those windows into the establishment have become so accessible because it's a tool. They want you to have a TV. They want you to have a phone. Even people who are like, I'm never going to be a millionaire, but I could, you know, I could, because they're telling me if I just do this thing, sell this amount of drugs, rob this bank, work this hard, I could get away with it. You know, traffic these humans, mm-hmm. you know, be a pimp, be a whatever. You know, then I can get that first $1 million, even the people who have dirt, nothing, right? But these days, that's all gone. Like, people are just like, I'm selling drugs to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that is why we continue as activists. For me, I'm just going to call this book what it is. To me, it seems like a bunch of anarcho-communist propaganda. Get your communist propaganda. But, you know, this is the idea, is as we continue to say we deserve more, we deserve livable wages, people, you know, over profit, we can retake control of our utilities. There's talk in here about solar farms run like a co-op. We have mm-hmm. Co-ops examples. Most people think stop at a grocery store, but we have the internet co-op that's running out here. We have all of these different things that we can look at a worker-owned model for if we can set up infrastructure and get things going. And people have money. I mean, free clinics. There's talk in here about what the Black Panther Party did, not only with the breakfast program, but with free clinics. You know, they opened up a free clinic because they couldn't get ambulances to come to their neighborhood. You know what I mean? And so when we're looking at RFK Jr., this guy, his human suit is melting as he's sitting there in this hearing, dismantling, you know, what little. I mean, I'm not saying that the things we had in place were perfect, but they're just tossing, you know, all hope out the window. And so what do we do in the face of the dismantling of Medicare, Medicaid, the healthcare system? You know, COVID's coming back. There are all these cases in California, things here. What did the people in Hong Kong do? They made masks. They got their PPE situation together and distributed it to the people because the government wasn't distributing it. People here have heard me talk about nonviolent resistance over and over and over again. And I also say over and over again that everybody has a role to play. Do we sit outside and just wait for the government to hand out Band-Aids and rubbing alcohol and things like this? Or do we start figuring out ways to get it and take care of our people?
The whole Robin Hood story seems to be a reoccurring thing through history. Once wealth starts getting consolidated to a point, it gets ridiculous. Like the line, what was hidden from the wise and prudent is now revealed in the babe and suckling.
Yes.
As a parent, thinking about what are the things that children know first, they understand equality immediately. I mean, you can't take dessert into a room full of kids and not have portioned it out exactly, because they'll notice. And immediately there's attention. So, you know, that's communist behavior. Owning the source of your income, or, you know, that's communism. Yet you're told, well, you could just start a business. You could, you know, have a big crew of people. But in my mind, I can't get past the fact that that's exploitation. And that's how I would make my millions of dollars as a contractor or something. But from the root, it sounds terrible because, like we were saying before, I know how that feels. I'm not going to do that to someone else. I've paid for multiple houses, businesses, boats, vacations, said nothing, you know, just did the work. And I don't want to put someone else in that position, watching me elevate into that person who takes the vacations and has all the stuff and multiple houses and far more than I could ever use. It goes back to the prophet. Are you going to be in the season of giving, or will it come after you, and you miss it as everything you own just goes out to the wind?
And it's a philosophy of what belongs to who. And we were talking about this off mic before we started the segment, is that there's a skewed vision of ownership that comes along with colonialism, right? So in some sectors, we have a term called the commons, that there are common resources that everyone has or should have access to. Open spaces, water, air, housing, healthcare. There are things that are baseline that every human being should have access to, period. And due to settler colonialism taking us from a village indigenous mindset that we all are a community that takes care of each other and share these resources, that it's appropriate for another party to come in and take them and own them and sell them back to you under servitude, or what is in this book referred to as some sort of pious judgment. And this is where the hard work comes of hearts and minds. And it brings us back to the tragedies. Herbert Walker Bush, the first Bush, was always saying in the early 80s, hearts and minds, hearts and minds. We got to win the hearts and minds. And that stuck with me to this day. I'm like, yes, the devil showed how to defeat him by telling us it's about hearts and minds. And sadly, a lot of people are so hard-headed in their minds and in their hard-hearted that they don't understand what they really need until it's gone. And it's not necessarily to watch another suffer. That's why this tragedy had to hit us at home here with the resurgence of full-fledged fascism, you know, is because it has to get worse before it can get better. I've said it on the show. I feel like I'm in a class and I got to help. My assignment is to work with, you know, the kid who doesn't get it. Don't get the assignment. You just don't get it. So now the teacher didn't put me next to you to sit here and help you figure out the math problem that I'm barely understanding, but we're in study hall together now, MAGA. Mm-hmm. When the MAGA guys are crying at me, you know, oh, it's so bad. I'm like, oh, welcome, 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 welcome. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I really want to punch you in the throat right now. But the idea still is that I know that it's going to have to keep getting to a point, because when you as MAGA get your J.D. Vance or your you're going to get your white supremacist stuff that you want, do you still not want trans and queer people to exist at all? Like, have you learned from your oppression now to not oppress others? And that's part of the human cycle that I think you talk about. Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes we get enough and then we're still turning on each other.
Yeah, there's a difference between living and thriving, though, too. There's always a next step that we feel like we need to take. And it's like a journey that we're all taking together. We just don't know it because we're not being very together. So, I mean,
say more.
I mean, the difference between living and thriving, like plants evolve. And for them, the politics and a lot of things haven't affected exactly where they're at, you know, well, some, but they still evolve. They have a reason to try to get better every time, every year, every season. They're changing before our eyes. They're not staying the same. And that's resilience. And I feel like when you say hearts and minds and you worry about people who are so opposed to changing their hearts and minds, I also see that there's a lot of people who change people's hearts and minds all the time and probably don't even notice they're doing it. And yeah.
That's why we got to keep talking. You know, like we said in the beginning of the segment, we can't hide. We can't be afraid of the devil, because only by being ourselves out loud can we touch those hearts and minds. And we can't do it in the vacuum. It takes brave steps to go on the radio, to go on the internet. You know, when people say, oh, this internet, you know, people need to get off it. And I'm like, yes, and there, you know, to more carefully curate what you take in. And also, that's a megaphone.
It is.
To reach so many people. It's such a megaphone. Speaking of COVID, TikTok, I think, blew up during COVID in a good way that gave so many people were quarantined and stuck inside and they had to express themselves. And we saw a big research, coming out. It was not just about a dance craze TikTok. It was about expressing oneself, and we get to see into and humanize people in a way that we didn't have before. And that's why they really wanted to take it away, was because like we get to go on the ground in cities and countries where people's realities was no longer filtered by legacy media. So that softened a lot of people's hearts and opened a lot of minds, right? They told me the other day that Zuckerberg is one of the top three richest people in the world now. And, you know, these government contracts, they're trying so hard to silence people on there because it's a way that we can express ourselves and show each other who we really are. And they're poisoning the well with AI and what's like, that's not a real person. I mean, even just regular, like just any video, like I think somebody was a model and they're like, this is not a real person. And she's just standing there, you know, doing something goofy, like, you know, wearing an outfit or something. And it's like, that's an AI generated human being that's just doing a thing. Mm-hmm. And so now we doubt each other's humanity on this whole other level. But it's one of just, I just want to say, it's just one of these things that if you're trying so hard to confuse and silence people, then what they're doing must be working. So we can't talk much more now because it's the end of the show. But I want to have you back on to talk some more about this, Travis. We're talking about a book called Mutual Aid, Building Solidarity Through This Crisis and the Next, by Dean Spade. We just touched on the introduction a little bit. The first part is what is mutual aid? And that's three short chapters, only about 44 pages long. And it's a nice little digestible pocket book. It covers the three key elements of mutual aid. And then we go into part two, which is working together on purpose. And some dangers and pitfalls, how to avoid burnout, as many of us are experiencing right now. I'm really into this book now. I'm glad that we have it. And I'd like to just invite you all to find it online for free. Many, you know, because it's anarcho-communist propaganda, I don't know if the author would appreciate me calling it that. Dean Spade is a lawyer and a writer. Associate professor at Seattle University School of Law. Spade has spent over two decades working in social movements to end prisons, borders, poverty, and war, and to support people struggling to survive. Spade's first book is Normal Life, Administrative Violence, Critical Trans Politics, and the Limits of the Law. So we're dealing with a scholar who does not talk down to us in this book, but a person who is experienced in multiple movements. And Travis, say something to the people.
All right. For your nervous system, it sounds tone deaf to say relax, but if you take the right vitamins, omega-3s for neuroplasticity, some magnesium to keep that amygdala regulating your emotional situation, and in-breaths longer than your out-breath, and smile. Love y'all.
Love y'all. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.